Hi, Brad. How are you doing?
Pretty well. There we go. Got the microphone on.
Yeah. So, are you ready for our big interview?
Oddly enough, I've actually been nervous about it, but it'll be fine.
I'm nervous too because there's a lot of technical stuff that's new to me. So, I'm going to ask you to bear with me as I fumble through everything. One of the first things that I think I'll do is just run an audio test. So it's a, let me see here. I'm going to just try to record this. Okay, so why don't you just say your name and where you're from?
Okay, I'm Brad Cole, and I am from Brooklyn Park, Minnesota.
Okay, let me try and listen to that and see how that worked. Okay.
You should record your own story with distance learning.
Oh, now that's weird. All right, I did not record you at all right, give me a second to figure this out. All right, why not? Maybe I need to raise the volume. Well, it's at high. Let's try it again. Where do you teach?
I teach at Breck School in Golden Valley, Minnesota.
All right. Try that again. Where do you teach?
Breck School in Golden Valley, Minnesota.
Well, that's not working, but I hope that it'll work on Zoom. I tell you what, let's. No, I won't be able to test it on Zoom.
The Zoom says it's recording, but
Yeah, I know that's recording. I'm checking. We use a second audio program as a backup, and I've never used it before. It's really complicated. And it doesn't seem to be picking you up for some reason, even though I can hear you perfectly. I wonder why. Let me see here. Oh, it may be input. Hold on one second. I'm not going to spend too much time on this. Input device. Here we go. Sources, application, input, all audio played on the system. All right, let me just try this one more time. Okay. So, what's your name and where are you from?
I'm Brad Cole, and I live in Brooklyn Park, Minnesota.
Oh, that did not work at all. All right. Device. Well, I'm just going to go with it. Okay, we'll just start on. What else can I do, right? Let's see. Okay, so I have to minimize this. And let's see. All right, so we're recording on Zoom. And today I'm interviewing Brad Cole, an educator from, is it Golden Valley? Are you in Golden Valley now?
I'm not in Golden Valley at the moment. I'm in Cross Lake with where my mom lives, but
okay, in Cross Lake, Minnesota. And it's Saturday, August 22nd at about 3 minutes after 2 Eastern Daylight Time. So, Brad, I'm so glad that you're here. And I want to just talk to you a little bit about the project. So, the Education Narrative Project is actually a sub-project of the Oral History Summer School. And they are doing a three-part program to interview educators about their experience in education during the pandemic. And the first segment of this program was about when the pandemic hit, what was it like as an educator? The second part that you and I are doing right now is how are educators preparing for the coming semester? Now, did you start your semester already?
Students start on the 31st and our workshop started last week.
Okay, great. And then the third part, and you could participate also in the third part of the project, will be during the semester and what it's like teaching during the semester. And then your interview will be available to you in the next day, both in audio form and in video form, but only the video form will be kept in the archive. Okay. Did you receive a like some sort of permission form? Great. Yeah. Were you able to sign that and get it back? Great. Yeah. Okay, good. Did you have any questions about that?
Not really. I don't think that I'm going to say anything that my employer would object to. So
okay.
I do have to preface that anything that I say is my opinion and is not reflecting the school, but
okay. Thanks for mentioning that. Let's see. I guess we will get started. My first question to you is about your summer. Just tell me how your summer has been, what you've been doing.
It's been not the summer that I would normally have had. Normally, right after school would be out, I'd have a vacation that I would go spend a couple of weeks on the beach out on the East Coast and, you know, completely unwind. And, you know, that didn't happen this year. But it's ended up being, in some ways, really rewarding because there have been a couple of things that have been going on. I got involved in some social justice equity workshops that would normally have been a one-day conference, and they end up spreading them out. So they did one or two sessions a week. And it was a really great opportunity to get involved, even if it was virtual, and to connect. So that professional stuff has been going on, and I have a research program that I work with students. And we didn't have the opportunity during spring to lay the groundwork like we normally would. So we ended up taking the summer. And while I didn't get the opportunity to be in person with them and do some of the things that we would have gone and done out in the community, we kind of shifted because there is an empathy building piece that you would do. It's a research program that basically combines math and social justice. And so you would go out in the community normally and do things. And it ended up shifting to more discussions around current events and systemic racism, as well as the technical skills. And particularly because students were more stuck at home, it was an opportunity for them to keep connected to each other and to issues that were coming up that they wanted to talk about and wanted to be a part of. So I've actually been with students all summer, and I've been doing professional development all summer, and it's been a nice balance.
Tell me about the professional development that you've been doing this summer.
Most of my professional development is generally around social justice anyway, because it's important to me. And once you get the systemic racism piece really coming to the fore, those discussions have become even more relevant. So some of it has been workshops that have been talking about how can you address these topics in the classroom? How can you promote equity, inclusion? How can you promote student-centered learning in the classroom? And everybody, of course, is experimenting with, and what does this now look like remotely? And that's been an element of it as well. So because I have been working with students in the summer, I've been able to take that work. And then actually sometimes the next day I'll see my students and say, hey, you know, we just did this really interesting thing. Let's talk about it. Let's try this activity. Let's do this. And so it really was a learn something, try it with the kids. And it ended up also connecting with some math teachers that we've been meeting once a week over the course of the summer as a result of these professional development things. That's where we got introduced. And we're creating different lessons and activities that students can do that tie their math and social justice together while still addressing curriculum. And we're also kind of in a spot where we say, yeah, you know, so we're creating the idea of what's an activity that can be done at home that doesn't necessarily need to be synchronous. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what do they have in the house that's accessible to them? How can they explore this topic? What can they go out and do sort of in their circle? And so we've been looking at things like that as well.
So it sounds to me like what you were learning over the summer was impacted or created in response both to the social justice movement that's happening now and by the pandemic.
Absolutely.
Tell me a bit about what you mentioned a minute ago about how people have been preparing to do the work remotely. Tell me about that.
Well, I mean, let's face it, right? I mean, we're teachers and we like to have things nailed down. And the last thing that anybody has been getting in any of this is a lot of direction. So we kind of, you know, people have been getting together and talking and saying, all right, you know, if we were to send a kit home with kids, what would we want them to have in it for supplies? Or if what issues are going to be relevant to students right now? So we've really been taking the time, you know, to sit down and have, you know, to have that hour long discussion. It's like, okay, well, what does body image look like? How could we tie that together? What does standardized testing look like? You know, could we create some activities around standardized testing? Can we create some activities around COVID-19 and the pandemic? Because if we can give them an opportunity to get their hands on the data and do some exploration and ask the questions, we're empowering them to find answers. Mm-hmm. Because they feel, you know, students really feel at a loss right now. You know, it's like they're foundering, and it's like, what do we do? You know, can we give them some tools and can we give them the opportunity to take ownership of what they see around them and to control the narrative a little bit? And in social justice world as well, one of the things that has been really exciting is I have a couple of colleagues in Northern Ireland that I met because they were visiting the US's State Department International Visitor Leader Program, and their youth activists and youth people workers over there. And we started talking, and I said, you know, because racism is also a different, it's also something over there. Mm. The isms look a little bit different.
Yeah.
So we're working on facilitating conversations between youth there and youth here, especially after the murder of George Floyd. You had the world was looking at us, and they were reaching out, you know, to me saying, you know, is everybody all right? What's going on? Because, you know, they'd visited that area as part of their trip. They knew where this was. And mm-hmm. well, how can we take our different perspectives? Because their story is not the story of the U.S., but there are some real similarities. And how can we empower our young people to have conversations between each other, which is something that wouldn't have happened without distance learning. Mm. We would never be able to even consider setting up this conversation. And now it just, you know, what's my classroom? My classroom is wherever anybody is.
Right. Can we talk a little bit more about that? Let's tell me more about what you're planning to do with those people in Ireland. So what kinds of lessons are you planning? How will they happen? What kind of tools will you, like technology tools, will you use? Have you gotten that far yet with them?
We've gotten sort of the point that the hardest part is finding time, because yeah. they're really busy. We're really right. busy. We all think it's important. You know, it's like, we all know who we want to engage. We all know, you know, kind of the conversations. We did meet a couple weeks ago to talk about it. And what we realized is that we have, you know, three groups of people coming from three different places, and that there's a little bit of groundwork. One of the women is in sort of the Belfast area. So it's an urban area. And the young people that she works with are almost exclusively white. Mm-hmm. And in general, more unionist, mm-hmm. more tied to Great Britain. And the other man is more rural area on the western part of the country. And that's the area that's been seeing an increase in immigrant and refugee populations and is more nationalist. So it's more tied to Ireland. So you have, you know, but what does a minority look like in Northern Ireland? Well, a minority is someone who's immigrated from Poland.
Right.
But those issues are still, well, who are you? You know, so mm-hmm. you know, the man that I work with, he's got a darker complexion. And if someone, you know, if he were to say he was Syrian, people would believe him. Mm-hmm. And so now he walks down the street and people say, where are you from? Mm. He said, I can trace my Irish heritage back to the 14th century. I'm Irish. But the young people are wanting to talk about those issues.
Right.
So we're at that point, but we realize that they don't know how to talk about them. You know, it's like they're afraid to say something wrong. They don't have the vocabulary. They don't have the ability, which is, you know, honestly, the same issue that the students here have. They really want to talk about it, but they're afraid that they're going to do it wrong. So that right. there's a little bit of empathy building and vocabulary building that needs to go on before everybody comes together. So we're working on that. We're looking Good. At, you know, probably it'll happen over Zoom and mm-hmm. you know, we'll find this time that's sort of like mid-morning for us and, you know, late afternoon for them, and
right,
you know, it'll all work out.
So a couple of themes that I heard before, one was a comment you made, like, we're not getting a lot of help. Could you expound on that a little bit, your feelings about that, other conversations you've had with other teachers about that?
Well, we just don't know what's coming next. Mm. You know, we'll be told, okay, it's going to be a hybrid model. And at this moment, my school is looking to a hybrid model. But, you know, well, if the numbers change, then this may change. And nobody knows from day to day what's going to happen. So it's really difficult. Because, you know, are we going to be in person? Are we going to be hybrid? Are we going to, well, you know, a lot of schools are going, are we going to open it all? Are we going to lend the teachers going, we need to know what we're doing. And you can't go up to somebody, you know, a week before school starts and say, oh, hey, you're going to go hybrid. All right. You know, this is fine. Okay. But now what? You know, is what does hybrid mean? Are you just going to point a camera at me in the classroom? And okay, if you're just going to point a camera at me in the classroom and there are kids at home, what are they going to see? No one has talked about what are they going to see? What is, do I have a whiteboard behind me? Am I going to write on my whiteboard? Are they going to be able to see that on a video screen? You know, is the microphone going to pick up sufficiently, especially if I'm wearing a mask?
Mm-hmm.
Now, how are we going to, you know, it's just like assuming that everything will come together and make it work.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't, we all know that, you know, from spring that a lot of things go wrong. You know, up here, I gained a lot of empathy for students in northern Minnesota because I was having the same connectivity issues that they were. Mm-hmm. I said before, I literally would have to hop into my car every day and drive over to the church parking lot because the church had faster speed for their internet.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I sat in the house, I could not get enough to do video conferencing, and I certainly couldn't get enough to access, say, AP Central for the AP courses, because that website is so bandwidth intensive that you can't do it. I mean, I couldn't even do it if I wasn't video conferencing. So
how will you deal with that issue in the fall?
Well, it's going to be interesting. You know, I'm going to be working remotely because of a cancer diagnosis, and you know, I'm doing really very well and I want to stay that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so what it's going to look like is they will have an assistant in the classroom that will basically be the easiest way to describe it is to say my avatar.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a horrible choice of words because it's really distilling them down to sort of, you know, really it's just almost distilling them down to something mechanical. They're there to be, I mean, so it's a good description because they literally are there to be in my space.
Mm-hmm.
And, but at the same time, this is a human being who is taking on extra risk. So there's this combination of relief that I can be safe and guilt that someone else is having to take on the risk because of that.
Is it risky because when you say hybrid, you mean that students will be in the classroom with them?
Right.
Okay. So this, your diagnosis and its connection to the pandemic, mm-hmm. and adds this whole extra layer of complexity for you and having to communicate and plan lessons with this other person. How's that been working? Have you been in communication with that person?
I've been in communication with him. It turns out that it's one of my former students.
Oh, so that's good.
That's good. And it's someone who I don't think always had the best experiences in school.
Which
is going to be something really good to lean into.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that he's going to be able to say, I remember when I was taking this course.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to be able to speak with empathy to the work that the students are doing and what it is that they're having to deal with. I'm trying to set up a studio space, you know, so I purchased myself a document camera. I've actually purchased an iMac so that I can have all of the faces on the screen constantly.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's one of the issues that you have when you're presenting is you can't see anybody.
Right.
So I spent a lot of time this spring sitting in my car talking at a screen basically teaching myself.
Yeah.
And hoping that, and then finding out that, you know, 10 minutes into something that I had been doing, the Zoom connection had died, or the Google Hangouts connection had died.
Oh, yeah.
Literally talking to myself because my, you know, I'm still seeing what I'm doing. Yeah, da, 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 da. Kids are gone.
That it will be helpful to have this other person there who could maybe send you a text message and
wait. Yeah. With so, you know, so I've got that, you know, I'll have an iPad that I can do some writing on, because this is math, right?
Yeah.
And now I'm trying to, I have to write, I have to show, I have to demonstrate. So I'm actually going to have like three computers in front of me.
And so will you be using like a stylus on the iPad?
Most likely.
Yeah. I was thinking about that.
It hasn't come yet. I haven't tried it. I get kids in a week and I have no idea how the technology works.
Yeah. This came yesterday.
About 2 days ago for mine.
I also have this Ethernet cord. I decided I didn't want to take chances and just plugged it directly into the router so that I'm not dealing with the Wi-Fi, which is capricious. So many things we have to think about. And that's interesting to me, the piece about purchasing accessories. Can you list for me accessories that you purchased with your money, with your own money?
I've picked up a document camera. I've picked up an iMac, so a desktop computer. I'm picking up an iPad and a stylus for the iPad. I've also kind of picked up a supplementary, well, the headset and supplementary camera, because I may need to have a camera that sets back a little bit further if I'm trying to connect. I went over to the hardware store. You can get this paneling that's glossy and white, and you know, it's not going to last for 20 years, but for $20, you can get a 4x8 sheet of this stuff and use it for a whiteboard. So I've, you know, much to my mother's chagrin, screwed it to the wall of of her basement.
So you can erase it?
Yeah.
What's it called?
It's just paneling. It's like something they'd use in a bathroom.
Okay.
And it's less than $20 for a 4x8 sheet of it.
What a great idea.
Well, you know.
I'm going to write that down.
Teachers are innovative, right?
Yeah.
You didn't want to watch me trying to, the only way that I could write something for kids to see during car teaching time was I had to go open a PowerPoint document, take a screenshot of what it is that I wanted to annotate, pull it into PowerPoint, and then write with my finger as a draw tool. And you can just imagine how, especially since it would like try to, you know, oh, this is the shape that you meant. And so it like auto do these curves and stuff.
Right.
Oh God. And the kids were great, right? They just sort of laughed with me through it. And we made the best of it.
What grade do you teach usually?
I teach high school last year, and this year it's going to be basically 11th and 12th graders with a couple of, you know, 10th graders that are accelerated.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the communication with the school. Mm-hmm. Tell me about who that communication has been coming from as they've been like developing a plan, if there is a plan, or if there's no plan. Who's been communicating with you? What kind of things have they been communicating?
As far as schools go, I have not seen any place that has done it any better than we have. And the fact that we seem to be stumbling and falling on our faces on a regular basis doesn't give me great hope for the rest of the world. But they created back in the spring a design team and a compliance team. And the compliance team is specifically looking at the technical issues and, you know, okay, we're going to need these OWL cameras, by the way, working the way that people thought they were going to.
What are they?
An OWL camera is like a 360 degree camera and microphone system that you would normally set in the middle of a conference table.
Yeah.
And so for a meeting, then, you know, the camera hears and then will, you know, sort of show who's talking.
Wow.
And it works pretty well around a table, but if you sit in the middle of a classroom, it's the microphone isn't necessarily designed for distance, and you're not necessarily getting the resolution if you're trying to, say, show a blackboard with it or a whiteboard with it. So it's like, okay, we need this technology in the rooms. We need this ability. So our, you know, and the compliance team is also working with a physician that is giving them recommendations for this is how you distance, this is the protocols that you need for cleaning. So, I mean, we've brought people on to advise for all of this. And really it's an independent school. So we're doing it with the intention of being hybrid because we can. We're not actually tied to what the state says unless the state says everybody, no matter who you are, we have a little bit more latitude. So they're setting up tents on the tennis courts and in the soccer fields and in the parking lots, and they're, you know, so that the choir can sing because you have to, you know, because you couldn't do it inside. And so they're really, really working on it. And I have to give them credit for it. So we've been getting updates on that, and they've been having Zoom meetings and stuff like that over the course of the summer. Division heads have been having meetings. The head of school has been having meetings. The compliance team has been. So we've been getting emails, and we've been having meetings that we can tune into usually once or twice a week. So they've really have been trying to say, you know, this is what we're planning. And then our design team is looking at the structure of the day. They've moved to the idea of 80-minute classes so that you're limiting exposure within cohorts. They've broken it down into a blue cohort that comes in on Monday, Tuesday, and a gold cohort that comes in on Thursday, Friday, and Wednesday alternates blue cohort 1 week, gold cohort the next. And we do on Wednesdays, all of the stuff that we would have done during the school day that's not classes all gets squished into Wednesdays now.
Meaning, so, what kind of stuff?
Well, we have, because we have an Episcopal affiliation, we have chapel, we have senior speeches, we do community outreach. And normally that would look like going out for a couple of hours on Wednesday mornings out into the community to do different service projects with places. Mm-hmm. That's all, of course, we can't go off campus.
Right.
So we're re-envisioning what that's going to look like. We're looking at different, they're calling them interest to action projects where young people can do some sort of self independent study on different things that are important to them. Mm-hmm. That's all getting rolled into that Wednesday schedule. There's time for orientation things, or, you know, writing your college essays, or what does it mean to be a ninth grader? I mean, there's just a lot of different things. World religions will fall into that. Mm-hmm.
I would love to hear more about how you think, like, describe what you think a class is going to be like. Where will you be? What will you be doing? What will your avatar be doing? Where will the kids be? So if you could maybe describe a day where they're at school, and then maybe a day or a class where they're not at school. Could you talk to me about that?
If I only knew.
Yeah.
this is part of the issue. If I only knew. I mean, my hope is that, because I'm trying to, and I'm probably further along the line than most people, because I've had to think about what it's going to look like. And in some ways, I think that my experience is going to be a little bit more consistent for kids. Because I'm coming in remotely to everybody.
Right.
So it feels a little bit, I don't want to say that everybody is at the same disadvantage, or maybe everybody is at the same advantage. Mm-hmm. Because I have more, in some ways, I feel like I have more latitude, because I've got the space that I've set up that is specifically for teaching remotely. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be able to see my face, right? I don't have to wear a mask. I'm at home.
Right.
And I feel that in some ways that maybe is almost going to make a better connection, but at the same time, I'm not in the room. So I look at the rooms are going to be set up where students are distanced 6 feet apart from each other.
How many students typically?
My classes are pretty small this year. And then, of course, only half of them were going to be in the room at a time. So normally my classes run between about 15 and 22.
Mm-hmm.
And so half of them in the building at any given time. So classrooms are going to be set up. Kids are 6 feet apart. They're going to be wearing masks. And they're going to be, in my case, between about 7 and maybe 12 of them in the room at a time.
Hmm. Sounds workable.
And then they're going to be a comparable number at home.
Mm-hmm.
And
at the same time?
They're going to do it synchronous, right? The kids are going to be dialing in from home to class live. So the live class is going to be on campus, and the kids at home are going to be synchronous with the on-campus group.
And it'll be as if they're together.
Yes.
The ones in the classroom and the ones out of the classroom
are going to be together and
learning at the same time.
Learning at the same time.
Oh, interesting.
And, you know, so I'm trying to figure out what's this going to look like, because I want to have students both have a good experience.
Will the students at home be able to see the students in the classroom? Is that what the owl is for?
That's what the owl is for, yes.
Got it now.
So they're going to supposedly be able to see the classroom as a whole, and
yeah,
they're supposed to zoom in on if someone is speaking.
Right.
They were using them last week for meetings, and I got to say, I don't think it's going to be as good as they think.
Mm. Probably nothing is.
So, you know, what is it going to look like?
Yeah.
My guess is that I'm going to, here's the problem, right? I want them to see me, but I also want them to see what I'm working on. So my guess is whether they're at home or whether they're at school, they'll all have laptops out. And on their laptop, they'll probably have me pulled up.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the projector in the classroom, they'll have whatever I'm working on.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's how I'm trying to, that's why I'm connecting with two devices, so that one camera can be on me and one camera can be on the work.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was something that we all missed in the spring.
Yeah.
And that the students at home should be able to have the majority of their screen be what I'm working on.
Yeah.
And then have me in a sort of a talking head. One of the I was taught a trick that's kind of cool. And what they did was they used Google Hangouts, and Google in general seems to be more secure.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a lot of colleagues that have talked about people crashing into Zoom meets with porn.
I've heard about that. I didn't know
that apparently was fairly common in some of the schools up here.
Wow.
But what they do is they use the Google Meet to present, and it's where the students log in. And they do like a screen share, but then you open up a Zoom meeting of one
mm-hmm.
that you as the teacher join. And then you minimize that window.
Mm-hmm.
And because Zoom Meet sits on top of everything else, you can drag that window over to the work that you're showing in Hangouts.
Mm. And that does sound cool.
So you can kind of have, and then the one guy was really good at it. So he'd move himself over and then he'd point.
Okay. Has anybody been talking to the students about their feelings about the upcoming semester or their ideas about it?
Students have been involved in the process, but I think it's going to be a huge surprise, because you know, one of the things that we're relying on essentially is 100% compliance with students. So we know that students are not 100% compliant. They never have. We're like all of a sudden expecting kids to be the angels that they never were.
Right.
Right. You know, oh, well, you know, sometimes kids, you know, when they turn their camera off in the Zoom meeting, they do this and they do that. It's like, well, you know what? They went out and they took 20-minute trips to go to the bathroom when we were in the building. So,
yeah.
You know, it's the same kids that were taking that 20-minute walk to the bathroom with the kids that were dirty the camera. So, you know, come on.
Yeah.
You know, let's get real here. I talked with my research students. I said, what are you most looking forward to? And they actually gave me four things. And it was interesting, partly in what they said and partly in what they left out.
Tell me.
One of them was structure. They missed structure. So they're looking forward to the structure of the day. The sense of place. So they're really looking forward to just being in the school because it's comfortable, it's familiar.
Yeah.
The sense of place for them. They're looking forward to interacting with their friends. And the thing that I thought was most interesting that they included was spontaneity.
So what did they mean by that?
Just the ability to have things happen. Because the one thing that they're finding a hard time reproducing in virtual mode is just that, hey, let's go do this. Because you have to, okay, we're going to get on this Google Hangout, we're going to do this, we're going to do this at this time, we're going to talk, and there's no spontaneity in any of their interactions in anything they do. So just that ability to have things happen is something that they're really, really looking forward to.
And how do you feel about your ability to provide those things?
That's something I've been putting a lot of, you know, there's a lot of head time on that. And one of the things that I've kind of been thinking about is, you know, in the spring, we usually started off with about 10 minutes of what's going on in your life or what's going on in my life. And, you know, whether it was a silly story about, you know, some bizarre thing that happened or if it was current events or so it was sort of let a little bit of that drive that sense of community and then move into the other things. And, you know, to take that moment and say, maybe this is not the time for this, but we'll get to it.
Yeah.
You know, it's still, I mean, what do I miss? I miss that unscripted time with kids. And they miss it as well.
Yeah.
You know, I don't get to see the kid that I don't teach. And, you know, so it's how do you create that? I mean, sometimes some of the extracurriculars, maybe. I mean, we did like quarantine quiz bowl.
What is it?
Well, I mean, I'm the quiz bowl coach, and we all decided that we didn't really want to give that up. So we tried to do it with, you know, Brady Bunch View on the, and, you know, how do you get people to buzz in? We never quite got that. But so we do the trivia questions, and we call in, and we joke, and we would laugh. And it became the social time, and we actually extended it. So on Friday evenings, we do friends and family. And so the kids and parents or brothers and sisters would just put the call up. And I'd read the questions, and the families would kind of go against each other to try to do it. And it was just a kick.
Oh, it sounds fun. Tell me about your relationships with the other teachers. How is, as you think about, as you've been preparing for the upcoming semester, have those relationships been impacted, been helpful, not helpful? How have they changed?
Some of the people that I'm close to, I think I've gotten closer to, and we've interacted outside of the school space more. Because, you know, there are those times that you just need somebody to talk to.
Yeah.
And sometimes you need to talk about school. Well, you can't really talk about school through school channels that are being monitored. And so it's, and then there are other people, it's just like, I don't think I have time for this right now. And it's, you know, they're good people. It's been hard, particularly for people that have had health concerns. The school has been willing to accommodate that. But there have been hoops like I have to get, you know, a letter from the doctor saying this is the health condition and this is why the accommodate, you know, this is why the protocols at the school are not sufficient to protect me. And, you know, that there have, some people have been having a harder time than others getting that approval. And so we kind of have been maybe working a little bit behind the scenes to support each other in that process for, so there's that element. And I think that the people that are going to be working remotely are probably going to become a little bit of a cohort because, you know, the focus has been on or returning to class. And it's like, okay, we have a hybrid teaching assistant in your room. Okay. But the thought has all gone into what's that hybrid learning going to look like in the classroom?
Right.
Not what it's going to look like from the screen of the kid who is off campus, not what it's going to look like for the teacher who's teaching remotely, because that's almost like special cases. And so, you know, we've been kind of getting together and sharing ideas, and it's like, well, what do you think of that headphone? I see you got a new headset. Where'd you get it? Do you like it? Or, well, what have you been using? And so hopefully next week, we're going to kind of get together and try out all of our settings on each other and say, okay, from a remote perspective, what does this look like? And my assistant that I'm going to be working with, we're going to find some time for him to be in a classroom and turn on all of the technology and see what I look like. And anyway, that, so, I mean, there has been collaboration. It's like, oh, I found this app, or, you know, hey, I know how, you know, I'm having trouble figuring out how to use the iPad for this. Oh, I've done this. So there has been a lot of that sort of back and forth sharing, particularly within the department.
Are these different kinds of partnerships that you've had than you've had in the past during the summer? Or is it very, I'm not talking really about the content, but the people, maybe the people that you're working with, and is it, are you having more, working more together with other teachers than you normally would during the summer?
Quite a bit more, actually.
Yeah.
Part of it is my circle of collaborators now is outside of my own school. It's now, you know, other teachers that I've been working on social justice curriculum with. It's, you know, friend that I have that teaches in San Antonio. It's, you know, people in other parts of the country that I know. We've been talking and collaborating and sharing ideas where normally summer you're off. And you get together for workshop week and you collaborate a little bit within your department, and then you go off and do what you need to do to get things done. But there's been a lot more going on because, like I said, we just don't know what's going to happen. And, you know, I'm an over-preparer, so I need to know how it's, you know, how to do what it is that I'm expected to do. But I also need to know how to do what it is that I think invariably is going to happen. So that when it does, I'm not caught in the, you know, off guard.
I'm just checking our time. Okay. Oh, good. All right.
I mean, I'm a teacher. It's what I do. I could go on for hours.
Good. I'm glad. We've been talking.
About 45 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. But we can go for an hour. We can go for 2 hours. That's fine. My next question would be, has the school, what kind of, what's the concern of the school for the kids? What areas does that lie in? So I hear a lot about technology, right? They seem to be doing a great job. They've got the design team and the compliance team. So is there anything missing from the school's concerns? What do you think?
We're an independent school, and the bottom line is we're market driven. And a lot of the decisions that are being made are made through a market driven lens.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so we need to provide our students with the experience that our families expect and that our families are paying for.
Mm-hmm.
Because our tuition is substantial.
Mm-hmm.
And if everybody, what is the value added in a situation like that compared to a public school? And so we're having to define what value added is. Hybrid learning is one of the things that's value added. And then we're actually a preschool through 12th grade school. Preschool through fourth or fifth grade actually is every student on campus every day.
Mm-hmm.
And then middle school and high school are on that alternating cohort schedule. They're saying, you know, we need to create that in-class experience. We need to create that service learning experience. We need to create that athletic experience. You know, what it is that, you know, we need to create that college preparatory experience, right? This is, you know, students go to our school so that they can get into, you know, top tier colleges.
Mm-hmm.
And if what we're doing isn't furthering that, why are they paying the money? So that's part of it right there, is that you kind of have to step back and look at the lens of what's motivating a lot of the decisions. Is, you know, we're also a nonprofit, right? You know, we have to continue to exist.
Mm-hmm.
To continue to exist, you have to have a revenue stream.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, I think the thing that's getting missed is the reality of young people. And one, young people are just not compliant. That's not who they are. And it's not a negative reflection on young people. That's just who they are. And so much is designed on everything going perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that everything is going to go perfectly. And so what I wish we could talk about a little bit more is how do we turn this into an opportunity rather than kind of, well, we're trying to recreate everything that we do. And they are. I'm not trying to speak ill of them in that respect. They are trying to re-envision what it is that we do looks like. And I appreciate that. But it's still, let's deliver the same types of things that we're delivering. And it's like, well, how can we leverage this technology opportunity rather than, you know, let's try to make this as close to being in person as possible. It's like, well, what are the things that you can do when you're not?
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to give some more thought to that. And I'd like to give some more thought, again, this is the, you know, the racial justice piece of it, that it affects different students differently.
Mm-hmm.
And to give that some thought. And, you know, one of the things that became really kind of obvious is when students are in their space, everybody gets to see their home space.
Mm-hmm.
And you can kind of masquerade equity a little bit if they're all in the building. But when you have one student who is quite literally sitting on their sailboat on the lake, dialing into class, and you have another student who is down in the basement with, you know, 1970s paneling behind them. That is creating a divide that is really, you know, or another student is in the kitchen because that's the space that they have, but another student is in an office. You know, that we're not really addressing those kind of equity issues. And I don't know what the best way to do it is, but I think we need to think about what that means.
Let's talk a little bit more about that. My question is, as you plan to be a teacher who has to grade students, how do you keep that equity in mind when, for example, when you're thinking about students turning in work late, and maybe that's because their brother needed the computer or their mother or their father. How are you thinking about those things? How are you building that into your classes?
I've always kind of embraced that because everybody's circumstances are different. And I think it's better to celebrate that than to homogenize it. I am not somebody who gets particularly stressed out if, you know, the dog shows up on their screen and they're petting their dog. Because I recognize that kid from my classroom. And this is a kid who has a hard time focusing. And I'm watching them and they've got the dog and they're holding it and they're cuddling it and they're petting it. It's like they're paying attention. And if that's what helps you pay attention, then this is a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. And it's, you know, so I'm more looking at it as how can you take this opportunity to really explore who you are and how can you best accommodate yourself in a learning environment? You have the ability to create whatever environment you need. What do you need? You know, step away from you have to do it my way and step into what's really going to work. Who do you have to share with? How do you have to fidget? You know, what do you need to do? Where do you need to be? How do you need to sit? I want you to be connected with me, but you can engage in those distractions in a way that does not disrupt anybody else. That in a way that you wouldn't have been able to do in the classroom, you can do that. You know, and you know, I'm planning on putting out to them, I said, you have control over your space. What is the perfect space for you to learn? What would be in it? What should be on the wall? What should be your special space? And create that space. You own it.
Tell me how you're going to communicate that to them. How's that going to
happen? Flat out going to tell them for starters. I mean, this is not something that I haven't done before. And, you know, hopefully I'll have some time to talk with kids individually or in, you know, smaller settings, because, you know, we've always looked for ways to solve problems. You know, you take the kid that, you know, handwriting is an issue. Graphomotor skills is a problem. You know, the kid's knows the material. And so let's try something. You know, go into the other room. I've got, there's a whiteboard on the wall in that office. Here's a camera. Take your test in there, do your test on the whiteboard, take a picture of it, bring the camera back to me when you're done. And watch their test scores goes up. And so those are the kinds of things that, you know, I think I'll still have those conversations. It's like, well, put a whiteboard on the wall of your room. Go back, play with it, do some of that. You know, try, you know, if this technology isn't working, let's find something else that does.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Tell me how, I mean, you obviously have put so much thought into how this is going to affect your students and what you can do to make this easier for them, and how you can be more flexible. Are those messages coming from the school as well? How to be more flexible and lenient because of all these difficulties that everyone's facing? Or has that been a discussion that, or what kind of discussions have you had about those particular issues with colleagues?
Well, there's a little bit of both. There's a little bit of, you know, we have to offer grace. Grace is the word that has been thrown around way too much this week. But
from who? Who's saying that, actually?
Administrative people.
They are.
Which is ironic, because...
Are they giving you, are they giving teachers grace, or they want you to give students grace? Or
they both? Want us to give students grace, so they want us to give them grace. I'm not entirely sure what stuff...
What's missing? What's missing?
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure what it comes down to it. I think that there, you know, there are a lot of philosophical expectations, and it's like, they may butt heads with reality. It's like, basically, you need to do everything that you would normally do, plus you have to do it in this environment, and plus you have to do it so that it's accessible to people in two different... It's like, really, I've got to teach the same class twice simultaneously.
Yeah.
And I feel I'm in a little bit better position by being remote, because really I am just teaching it one way, and it's just ported out to two different sites.
Right.
And I don't know that there's been a lot of thought put into, you know, it's like, this is how it should work. But it's like, yes, but how is it going to work?
So problematizing, thinking about what might go wrong.
Right. You know, it's like, well, everything will go, we're going to do this and everything's going to go right. It's like, no, it's not. But I mean, I think that that's always sort of where it is that I think we want the school to be in terms of looking at kids. But there's also, you know, let's create some norms and have them be very concrete. It's like, you must have your camera on, and you must be looking into the camera, and you must be doing this, and you must be doing that, and you must be this, you must be.
Can you tell me more what those things are? Are those rules for the students or for the teachers?
You know, they're trying to come up with a set of distance learning norms for students.
For students.
And, you know, don't.
You must be looking into the camera?
I don't think that one's going to.
Okay.
But I mean, it's the type of thing. And I've heard schools actually put that one out there. You must be looking into the camera. And it's like, you don't.
Have you ever worked with children before?
No kidding, right?
Yeah.
It's, you know, so I think we're navigating that, and some of that philosophically, it's like, give them a little space, and, you know, let's look for some alternative ways. Am I going to be giving maybe as many tests this year? Probably not. Am I going to be giving more quizzes and things that are in an online format or a collaborative format? I'll probably see, they'll be seeing a little bit more of that. You know, different projects or something like that they can do. It was one of the beautiful things last spring, I thought. I think it bugged other people, but I loved it. What? Was after a while, was where they would come into class from. And I had, you know, a class in the afternoon. It was a trig class. It was for students who needed a bridge between Algebra 2 and pre-calculus. Mm-hmm. And so it was already a kind of a group of divergent thinkers anyway. And one of them is in Chicago because, you know, his mom lives in Minneapolis, his dad lives in Chicago. And so he's in Chicago, sitting at the kitchen table, because we're distance learning. Why does it matter?
Yeah.
And another one of them was one day standing in a field in Montana in the snow, with his phone up like this, trying to get the signal so that he could be in class. And Another one is, you know, driving in the car. It's like you better.
Oh my God. So, you know, that would be anxiety producing as a teacher, I think.
Set the phone down. So some of it would kind of treat it as a podcast.
Yeah.
You know, it was a live podcast, but some of it would treat it that way. Some would be in their bedroom and, you know, curled up with the dog, and some would be out on the dock. And it's like, you know what? This is working. They actually did better on some things.
What things?
They actually did better on acquiring the material in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, you know, you can work together on this homework assignment and that's fine. You can be over here it's like, there's some beauty to this. And, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, there may be a way to collaborate with teachers in other schools in other parts of the country or in other parts of town. And it's like, I teach calculus, you teach calculus. What mm-hmm. can our kids do together?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
you know, years and years ago, there was a teacher who had her calculus class do these horrible videos. They were really bad. And she put them on YouTube. And so I looked her up and I said, I challenge you to a throwdown. And so we conferred a little bit and it's like, okay, let's do Taylor and McLaurin series. And so her kids did a video on Taylor and McLaurin series and my kids did a video on Taylor and McLaurin series and we shared them.
What a great idea.
And it's like, why not? Why can't we do this?
So this is the kind of opportunities that this situation makes more possible.
Exactly.
Yeah. It is leading to some creative thinking that might not have, well, it occurred to you before, you've already done it. Maybe other teachers might have more creative ideas. I want to go back to something you mentioned a few minutes ago, which was about you might switch from larger tests to quizzes in some cases and do more project-based work. Mm-hmm. Tell me about why you would do those things and what that might look like.
Part of the reason is there's a level of security issue. And I have, you know, right. I mean, you know, everybody has got computers now and it's coming on a camera. I mean, right. You can go into this assuming your material is not secure. So if that's part of what you're relying on when you're giving an assessment, you're going to have to set that aside. Mm. Quizzes are more sort of a check-in. And when I was giving quizzes, last spring I was giving them online and I was giving them asynchronously so they would do it at home on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And that allowed them to take the time that they needed. And I kind of created them with the idea that they would have access to textbooks and calculators
right.
and things like that.
Right.
So that gave them an opportunity to say, well, you know, do I know how to do these problems? And that gave feedback to me. And also wanted to give them a little bit more of an opportunity to collaborate. They do anyway, you know, whether you want them to or not. So it's like, let's see if I can sort of capitalize on the culture that's already there.
Mm-hmm.
And see if, because it's not going to generally be one student does the work and everybody copies it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if three people were working together, and so of course it came with it with a similar approach, if that approach was wrong, then I kind of knew who'd been working together because they all kind of had the same wrong thing.
Yeah.
And I could go back to that group without saying, hey, you cheated off of each other because I told them they could work together.
Yeah.
And say, I noticed that as you were explaining this to each other, this is where you ended up and there are a couple of problems. Let me go over this with you.
Mm-hmm.
So I had that element and just the idea of projects. If they're going to be stuck in a space, it's really, I think, important for them to have an opportunity to get out of that space, or at least out of that moment a little bit, and look at bigger issues, because they're feeling disconnected from their community right now.
Yeah.
And if they're feeling disconnected from their community, how can I tie that math into something that brings them into their community? Even if it's not physically into their community, it's still bringing them into, it's getting them out of their space, because they're feeling constrained, they're feeling confined, they're feeling locked down. And how can I, even though they're still, secluded or whatever you want to call it, that they don't feel locked down.
Mm-hmm.
This is your opportunity to really go someplace with ideas.
Taking them out of the moment.
Right. And, I've advised seniors last year, because we have a 4-year advisory cycle, and I've been with them for 4 years, and I ended up sending them a note because they're heading off to college, now. And I said that I'm really hoping that you can get past mourning what you've lost. Graduation wasn't the same because we had to do it in the school parking lot, and we did this, and I didn't get to do this thing or that thing, and we couldn't have a graduation party. And I said, I'm hoping you can get past that and begin to really celebrate the opportunities that are coming your way. And I kind of went on and I said, we've got, when I was in high school, computers were first starting to show up in sort of the business world.
Mm-hmm.
And my friends were the ones that they were all self-taught, and, they started, they learned things, they learned how to hack into the school Scantron system and alter the code. So when their student ID number came through, it randomly marked just enough wrong to still be in the A range.
Oh my God.
And another one of them was like the big software pirate for the whole Twin Cities area. Nobody knew who he was, but everybody knew of him.
Uh-huh.
And, this was a kid that 16 years old, went off and got hired and was getting paid more than his parents for a part-time job.
Wow.
And I said, because of the technology, they flipped the hierarchy,
mm-hmm.
and rose to positions of influence and power that would never have happened under the system the way that it was. And I said, you're in that same spot, because you're the ones that are going to be able to figure out how to connect this way. And it's going to expand. It's a whole new way of working. It's a whole new way of collaborating. It's completely different. And you're going to be able to master that in a way that is going to flip that hierarchy again,
mm-hmm.
and put you into that spot that you can be an influencer in society, and you can be the one that makes the change, because if you've got the one that's got the tools to make the change and everybody is coming to you, you have the ability to influence that change, and we need that. And you're the ones that are going to do it. But you need to embrace the fact that it's different right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the fact that it's different is what's setting you up to be leaders in a way that the people who have come before you and the people that are come after you aren't going to have.
As you look forward to the fall, to your classes starting, what are you most excited about?
Well, mostly I'm just scared. It's like everything is just going to go horribly wrong. I know it. It's all going to go wrong. Because I feel an obligation to them to get it right.
And when you say everything, what are you most focused on? Is it having to deal with your avatar? Is it having to deal with the administration or parents or the technology? What is it that you're focusing on when you're scared, you're nervous?
I want to make sure that I get the content to them in a way that's solid, and that I want that learning experience to be good. That's the thing that I worry about the most, right? I want this to be as good or better than regular school in terms of content, because a lot of the other things are sort of going away. So let's really make sure that this is good.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but what I'm excited about is sort of that empowerment piece. You know, God knows we live in interesting times.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking forward to capitalizing on that energy and that righteous indignation and all of that, and helping them get to a spot that they can use that. That's what excites me.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them just, they don't know what they don't know, right? I don't know what I don't know either, but they see things and they want to change. And to move them past that sort of, I'm shouting and I'm carrying a sign, so therefore I'm engaged. It's like, you are engaged and we need that. Where do you go now?
Mm-hmm.
Because where you go now is what school is about.
Mm-hmm. What advice would you give to your students to be successful this coming semester, as different from all other semesters?
The most succinct thing that I can say is own your circumstances.
Mm. Tell me what that means. Or give me some examples of owning. As a student, what would owning my circumstance mean? How could I capitalize on it?
Well, and that's, I think, exactly it, is look at your strengths and how can you leverage your strengths to create an experience that is the best for you? How do you learn? How do you this? You know, one of the things that I look at is, I call it first out of the box, FOTB. And in a classroom, who's FOTB? It's the extroverted kid. It's the kid who processes everything externally.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the first one that says something. And the rest of the conversation or the lesson or whatever hangs off of what they started with.
Mm-hmm.
You have this other student over here who really likes to process and isn't willing to put something out until they have got it fully formed in a place that they're confident in.
Mm.
That voice never gets heard. In a digital environment, that voice can get heard
mm-hmm.
in a way that it wouldn't have otherwise. And I was seeing a little bit of that last spring too, that some of it was very frustrating to the kids that were used to being FOTB, but to the ones that were used to never being heard, you watch them blossom.
Right.
And I think we can create space in this platform for both. So it's like, who are you? Are you visual? This is a visual medium. The way that you display your work to me might not necessarily just be on paper now.
Mm-hmm.
So how can you best explain to me what you've learned? You know, this is your house. This is your internet connection. What's the best that you can do? And really what I'm hoping is, who can you reach out to?
Mm.
Because you have the ability to not stay within the bubble of the school.
Oh, can I write that down? I really like that. That who can you reach out to? Getting students to think about that. Just as for my own classes.
But you know, why should their cousin who's in Denver not be a part of their learning?
Mm-hmm.
What can you do to collaborate with someone? You know, can I take a project and say, I want you to collaborate with someone that you know that isn't at our school.
Mm-hmm.
On this. Or you've seen the resources in the community and who has resources and who doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
How can you support learning for others someplace else?
Wow. How can you support learning for others? Yeah. I'm sorry. You know what? They even told me not to do this, but it's as a teacher, when I hear something like that, I want to incorporate it into my own work. So yeah, I really like that. So what, because I think that you've thought so much more about this than I think a lot of other teachers have, what advice would you give to other teachers? Let's say maybe at your school. What would you tell them as the new semester starts?
I think the most practical thing that I can tell everybody is try everything out first.
Test.
Just test it. You know, go have your husband get onto his laptop and set up your setting and have him give you feedback on what it looks like.
Yeah.
From the perspective of a student.
Right.
You know, I think there's a huge piece right there is just practice. And I don't feel that I'm practiced enough. I have to be my own. I could tell my mom, I suppose. So that's part of it. Part of it is don't forget that kids are kids. They weren't angels before and they're not going to be angels now.
Mm-hmm.
Because so much of what we're doing is predicated on the fact that kids are perfect.
Yeah.
And they're not.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it is, and I think another piece would be really look for opportunities to let kids be individuals.
Mm-hmm.
Don't try to inflict a homogeneous experience on them, because mm-hmm. they're all coming from different places. And even more when they're not in the building and you don't have control over the environment.
Right. Okay. This is actually my last question. And then I'm going to ask you if you have anything that you'd like to add. Mm-hmm. But because you know you better than anyone else does, you know areas where maybe you might struggle or you might succeed. You know your strengths, you know your weaknesses. So what would you say to you as you get ready to go into this semester?
Be willing to ask for help.
Mm.
That's not something I do well.
Mm.
And part of the reason that I don't do it well is because I guess I must share that with a lot of kids, don't believe that other people understand me.
Mm.
And that I have to trust a little bit that either people understand me better than I think they do, or that they're willing to learn.
Mm-hmm.
This is, you know, as I said, when I sent you that note, I'm Asperger.
Mm-hmm.
And that has actually been really helpful. It's been, you know, especially now that I've identified it, but it's been helpful in my career for a couple of reasons, and particularly now,
mm-hmm.
Because I don't have the luxury of believing that other people think the way I do.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, I have to always be thinking about other people's perspectives and how I'm going to communicate to them.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes in really handy when you're talking about race equity, when you're talking about distance learning,
mm-hmm.
because you really have to step into the other person's circumstance. And it's something that because of my, shall we say, enhanced ability, I can call it a disability. It's never manifested itself that way. I mean, I guess it does sometimes socially. I'm pretty awkward, but it creates that opening and that empathy that I don't assume that everybody's the same.
Who can you reach out to as you, if you encounter difficulties? Do you have people you can reach out to this coming semester?
Well, you know, my mom has always been my emotional support person, and the, you know, I'm feeling very strongly about this. Do you think I worded it all right? You know, so she's that is something that, you know, while I would, you know, kind of rather be living in my own home, you know, I can honestly say I haven't spent this much time living under my mother's roof since I was in high school. But at the same time, having that built-in person that really understands me, when I get stressed over this, to bounce that off of has been really valuable.
That's great.
And I actually have a department chair that we think a lot alike. And so we have kind of off the record conversations every once in a while that kind of support each other when it comes to things like that as well.
There are a
couple of other friends at work that I can talk to too, and friends outside of work that I can, if I just need to vent, I've got people outside of work I can vent to, which is nice.
Is there anything that you would like to add?
I don't know. This has been good for me. To just sit here and talk to somebody outside of my circle. And it's given me some confidence in the plan and the direction that I'm wanting to take. And somehow it makes me feel a little bit less alone.
Oh, good.
So maybe that's also another piece of advice, is find someone who's completely outside of your circle of what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
That you can go to listen, because we're going to need listeners.
Yeah. We're going to need listeners. Is there any topic that I missed that you think would be important to bring in as you think about the coming semester? I mean, the answer could be no, but.
Well, the types of things that come to my mind are sort of the whole overload thing. And, you know, everybody, when you have technology people, for instance, whose only job is to play with new things and look at new pieces of software and do stuff, you know, they say, well, I found this cool thing. It does this. I found this cool thing. I found this cool, this thing. And it all gets shoved down at you.
Yes.
Like, you know, you're now asking me to do your job.
Right.
By looking at all of this stuff and my job.
And teach it to someone else, a whole room full of someone else's.
Right. You know, I now have to be the audiovisual technician. I now have to be the every new piece of software that comes down the line person. I now have to be, and I have to deliver my content.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that people are neglecting that piece, is that you're not just asking teachers to do their job. You're asking teachers to do their job and about three other ones.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you're using them as a political pawn.
Yeah. In what way?
I mean, the school, like I said, has been trying very hard to create a good environment.
Right.
I don't know that they have always succeeded, but they are trying.
Right.
And I feel that that's something that I don't see everywhere. But I thought it was interesting that, you know, in the spring, when everything gets shut down, teachers are heroes for trying to teach remotely and to try to deliver content and engage with the kids and be what they do, right? Be who they are. And all of a sudden summer rolls along and, you know, distance learning was the most horrible thing in the world, and teachers couldn't do their jobs, and teachers weren't doing their jobs, and, you know, see here all of this, and we need our kids back in the classrooms in person. It's like, what happened, right? I was a good guy, and now I'm utterly incompetent.
Right.
Because you want somebody to babysit your kid.
Right.
And, you know, and now, you know, and we're political pawns right now. It's like, schools have to open. It doesn't matter. Well, teachers are going to get them. No. You know, we've lost five teachers this month that have retired or resigned.
Yeah. We also had some teachers that just said, I can't do it. I can't deal with the technology. I, I can't learn this so quickly. I'm afraid of getting sick. And, you know, just all these things. We also lost some people. Yeah, I feel you when you say that bit about overloaded and learning new things. I think, you know, people come to us and say, like you mentioned, well, this great app, it's the best thing since sliced bread and you've got to use it. And I'm like, no, I can't add one more new thing. You know, it means I have to teach it to all my students and I have to learn it and be an expert at it. And it's a lot more than just, yeah, it's a great app. Right.
Before I started working with the kids, you know, in the parking lot this spring, I had never been on a video call.
There you go.
And
what's Zoom?
I never heard of Zoom. I've never been on a video call. Now, I got to say, what I'm finding I'm liking about this is I'm doing things that I wouldn't have done. I would not have, for instance, gotten in my car and driven across the Twin Cities during rush hour for a 5 o'clock meeting in St. Paul for an organization that I really liked what they were doing.
Right.
We'll get on a Zoom call with them.
Yeah.
And, you know, that I think there's some really good stuff to come out of this. And I'm learning. Teachers don't mind learning. Teachers just... Everybody, you know, you have a whole tier of people in schools that their sole job is to tell teachers what to do.
Right.
Teachers can do a fine job of telling themselves what to do.
Yeah.
And I don't need, so if I have one administrator, they're going to tell me what to do. If I have another administrator that they've now hired for this to justify their job, they're going to have to find something to tell me to do. And if they hire another person who's in charge of this thing, they're going to have to tell me something to do to justify,
their job.
Well, now, instead of having like one administrator, I have like eight that are all trying to justify their job by giving me new things to do.
And I think that may be a difference between like a private school or independent school and a public school like where I work, where you're often just left to your own devices, and which has its drawbacks, but you don't have too many people telling you what to do, which is kind of nice. Now, one thing I was thinking, oh, maybe Brad could relate to this. Yes, the last 2 days were our professional development days. And normally, for reasons that you might understand, I get very anxious about going to a lot of meetings with a lot of my colleagues. It just produces a lot of anxiety for me. And I found like, oh, this professional development online is fantastic.
It is.
Because I'm like learning, but I don't have to be in that room with all those people and make conversation and have those social interactions. I can have them at a distance and I can turn off the camera and know no one is looking at me, but I'm still there.
Right.
Did you relate to that? Can you relate to that?
Very much. I found that so much better because I can control my distraction a little bit.
Mm.
You know, sometimes, like I said, sometimes it's good to treat it kind of like a podcast.
Yeah.
Where you're just kind of listening to it, but you're doing something else. I actually can, I can focus a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I said, the first thing that'll happen if I go and do, like a division meeting, right? They're going to say, everybody go sit in a circle so we could all see each other.
Oh God. Yeah.
And it's like, all right, you have immediately, I have certain amount of brain power and here's my little Asperger brain is now having to channel all of that into the social norm piece of it.
Right.
Because this is how I have to interact in the setting. This is how I have to sit. And this is how I have to hold my face. And this is who I have to look at. And this is what every bit of energy that I have into the social interaction.
And what did I just say? And how is it being heard?
Right. And I've got nothing left for the content.
And I find I have I don't have to deal with all that when it's on Zoom.
That's right.
It's I was saying to some colleagues, I'm like, I hope we never go back to in-person professional development days. Usually I just avoid them. I don't go. But this time I attended 9 hours of meetings and I felt okay at the end.
Yeah.
Now, you got me talking about me. I shouldn't be doing that. But I just kind of felt like you and I had some similarities along those lines.
I can totally relate to that. I actually have preferred this virtual teaching. I like it better.
I hear you, because right before the pandemic hit, I was telling my friends, I was saying, I can't take the in-class teaching anymore. It's just really getting to me. It's burning me out being in front of all, you know, because we have classes of 30, 35 people
right.
every day. And then all of a sudden the pandemic hit and it was like, oh, you got what you asked for. Now deal with it. Quick, learn all this technology. So yeah, there's been some positives to this. Some of my prayers were answered.
I'm not feeling bad about this.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, I think that would be a great place for us to end. And I want to say thank you so much. This has been such a pleasure for me to talk to another teacher, to hear about what you're going through, and to be able to commiserate about it a little bit. And I just enjoyed meeting you. I want you to send me an email every now and then. Let me know how it's going for you.
Well, you have my email too, so don't
yes.
feel like you need to be a stranger.
Totally.
I have really enjoyed this conversation, just as a conversation, as well as, you know, giving at least one perspective on pandemic teaching.
Mm.
But absolutely, I think that maybe you and I need to get our students collaborating on something. That'd be a kick in the ass.
That could be fun. My students are beginning English speakers. Mm-hmm. So it could be really hard, but I'll be thinking about it. I'll put my thinking cap on.
I think that could be really interesting, because it becomes about storytelling.
Mm-hmm. That is something that I could see working, storytelling. Yeah, that would be great. Yes, let's think about it. Mm-hmm. All right, so what's going to happen next? Basically, I'm going to get some files from Zoom and maybe that other audio thing that wasn't working at the beginning. And I'll be sending those files to you in the next 24 hours. And then you'll probably also be getting communication from the people that are running this program,
okay.
like Suzan or, oh my God, I'm Jenny.
Yeah.
Yeah. And really that's it. Mm-hmm. We're finished. Thank you so much. And have a great rest of the weekend. Okay.
Oh, I think I will.
Okay. Bye-bye.
See ya.